When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name is David Reed, and joining me, as ever, is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, David.
How are you doing?
Hello, world.
Hello, world. Those of you who are listening.
I'm enjoying a combination of a Diet Coke and a coffee at the same time.
Are you doing alternate sips?
Oh, pretty much, yeah.
Marek's very demanding with his caffeinated drinks. I often have to get him both.
A very difficult guest. When I arrive around David's house to do the podcast, he probably had a feeling of dread.
It's
disgust,
it's
mild disgust.
It's just nice to be able to prepare refreshments for somebody, isn't it?
What's that thing they put annoyingly, they describe what's in the film on the card, like the mild peril.
Oh yeah, I love mild peril. It's like, oh, I don't know if I'm in the mood for mild peril.
What is mild peril? Sort of leaving the house when you might need a toilet?
Or realising your foot has gone over the yellow line on the underground. Go, oh.
Yeah, your fly is half undone on a roller coaster.
Sorry, I mean, it could just all fly off at the end.
Is that mild peril or serious peril?
I mean, that's pretty serious peril, isn't it?
Your fly is a quarter undone on a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Mild peril.
A tuna wrap is a day out of date.
That's good. Someone's pissed on your gravy.
that's just an insult. Is that peril? I mean, there's no chance you're still going to eat the gravy, is it?
Yeah. You've got a cat allergy.
Yeah. And you go and see the musical Cats. Who knows? They might have used cat hair in something.
That is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. And you'd probably be a bit anxious all the way through.
I think a lot of people probably get allergies after watching Cats.
Probably, or some kind of allergy.
Imagine, because there didn't used to be cat allergies, did there, in about 20 years ago?
No, we just had dead people.
Yeah.
I studied the musical Cats for an entire year.
What, you on drugs or something?
When I was 10 years old, in RE lessons.
What, the teacher made you do it?
Yeah.
I was just, because at RE you get the shit teachers who aren't really proper. I mean, no offence, but the least qualified teachers.
Yeah, I studied it for a year. I've never seen it.
We did some weird stuff. We had to try my middle school. We had to all play David Bowie's Ground Control to Major Tom on different instruments, like the triangle.
Right. I mean,
it was quite cool in retrospect, but we just thought, what's going on? And our teacher's probably thinking, well, I'm going to make your kids really cool.
Yeah. Is there a lot of triangle in?
It would play certain... I remember, I think I was on the triangle, so it was... Ding! Ground control to me.
Did the teacher sing? Or was it a sort of creepy children's choir?
I can't remember that bit. I think I was focusing so much on the ting bits. That was crucial to setting...
Absolutely.
Setting up the space atmosphere.
Ting!
Oh... It reminds me of, I suppose, sort of being at war with...
yourself.
Japan.
that's an excellent segue. That's absolutely excellent.
Have you
been to see a film similar to that?
I think so. That might have been why I'm getting confused.
Oh, right.
I thought it was my own memory, but it turned out the film was so realistic.
Right.
That I thought... I was actually an American soldier.
At war with the Japanese.
Fighting against the Japanese.
So this is Hacksaw Ridge.
Yes.
If listeners haven't cottoned on yet. What is the basic premise of this? People are saying it's good.
Well, Hacksaw Ridge is the story of this... it starts off with the upbringing of this bloke called Desmond Doss, who was a conscientious objector.
Right.
Or didn't agree to the bearing of arms. This is one of his fundamental principles. Because he lived in it was brought up with domestically abused, and his dad had sort of problems.
Right.
So he fundamentally disagreed with the bearing of any arms or any sort of killing of people. But he still signed up because he felt that it was his duty.
Right.
So he had to go through this training camp, but he refused to hold a rifle and do any rifle training.
Very high maintenance soldier, wasn't he?
Yeah, and then he got sent out as a medic.
Right.
So he was the only medic who didn't carry a rifle. And it's a true. It's based on a true story of when he went to. He served in the Battle of Okinawa.
Oh yeah.
And he was the first. I'm just reading stuff from IMDb. The first man in American history to receive the Medal of Honor without firing a shot. And the film is basically is about his story, really.
Okay, who plays him?
He's played by Andrew Garfield.
He's in a lot of stuff at the moment.
We're going
isn't
through
he?
A weird. I'm going through a weird phase where it's basically just every film is linked by an actor, and so Silence I saw recently.
Yeah,
and he plays Andrew Garfield is the master of this sort of quiet, sincere, very overly sincere person. You know, gentle.
He's quite good at playing slightly neurotic as well, quietly neurotic.
Yeah, he plays. He's a go-to. He is this gentle, sensitive soul of Hollywood. Now, this is directed by Mel Gibson, who everyone hates nowadays.
Yes,
but he's not really. Everyone's lost respect for him. I want to first talk about Apocalypto. Have you seen Apocalypto?
I haven't seen Apocalypto. I saw the hilarious trailer. Have you heard about the trailer for Apocalypto? I think
no.
I may have mentioned this on the. he put in a subliminal frame into Apocalypto's trailer. You know, where it's just a single frame. So, in a trailer that's all jump cuts of you wouldn't notice it, but somebody slowed it down and found it. Apocalypto is about tribesmen. Is it South America?
Yeah.
Anyway, there's one shot, it's quite creepy and cool, of a load of people in white clay, like in a cave, standing in a line.
One.
Anyway, there's apparently a subliminal frame of it moves sideways and Mel Gibson's there with his arm around one with a big cigar smiling into the camera.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Great.
Right. Anyway,
absolutely.
That's all I know about Apocalypto.
Apocalypto, I mean, it's basically the end of the Mayan kingdom and this new. And this, bloke who's in this tribe gets taken over and they all get sent off to be sacrificed. It's just a sort
right.
of... I think it's absolutely brilliant. As a weird action, thrilling drama.
Yeah.
It's so underrated, Apocalypto. And a lot of people got on its back by saying, oh, it's a bit racist towards the Mayans. But, I mean, there aren't any Mayans left to get... It's like saying, oh, right.
So fuck those guys.
But you get, gets to the point. Where you think, do you know what? It's just a Mel Gibson thriller. It's not like saying, "Oh, Jurassic Park, the Tyrannosaurus Rexes are really get a bad rep in that."
I mean, they made them out to be mindless savages.
There were a lot of them were just like playing chess and picking daisies, but just because one or two of them
sure?
went around killing people,
they'd eat.
Everyone talks about Tyrannosaurus Rexes as arseholes.
They'd eat a Diplodocus every now and again, but most of the time they're chilling out.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were policing the area, making sure, you know, no other predators came
exactly.
in.
Exactly. Well, I loved Apocalypto, and I think Mel Gibson is a good director, but this. I thought this had really weird casting issues.
Okay.
And I spoke to someone, a friend who came to see my Edinburgh show, and he bought me tickets to cinema, Mark Bell.
Yes.
He recommended this to me, and he said it was quite good up until when Vince Vaughn comes into it.
Oh, fucking hell.
And Vince Vaughn. He 100% right. So you're watching the story and you think, oh, it's one of those films you think they're setting the groundwork, you know.
Yeah.
He's growing up, he's becoming a man, here are his values. Then he goes to this training camp and it's just, I think, a really shit version of the Full Metal Jacket training camp.
Right, right.
Which I know it's a different war, you know, but that is absolutely brilliant.
It's now the template for everybody's war film, isn't
yeah.
it? And it's like, we've seen it and you're not going to top it. That might be what it's like, closely, but find your own details.
And even the introduction, so he walks it, you know how they introduce characters in who are going to be in your troop?
Yes.
And it's always really shit. This is one of the shittest examples of, hey, new guy. Hey, there's Fonzo. He's Italian and likes to smoke. There's small Giuseppe. There's Tex. The Texan, and they all stop what they're doing. They're all just turning around and going, "Hi, I'm this guy." And it's not your. It's it's show rather than tell.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this is a really bad example of.
And they all have to have their own distinct thing, so you remember them. There's Tex, he's a Texan. There's Pete, he's a Texan. Oh, he can't come. He's not coming.
There's a guy who plays cards. There's a guy who does art or something weird.
There's the guy who dresses as a chicken.
It's all stuff. Oh, that guy's got glasses. He's the intelligent. You know, it's just all that bullshit. And then Vince Vaughn comes in as the army officer trainer, and you think. And I understand why people hate Vince Vaughn. It's fully deserved.
You know what? He was a funny actor when he was a bit younger in Swingers and stuff. The stuff he did with
well, it's just Swingers. That's the only good.
No, there was another one. There was another one with fuck, what's his name? Who went on to do Iron Man and shit? Jon Favreau.
Yeah.
He was sort of Jon Favreau's hype man. You know, he was the humorous one, but. Everything I've seen him in the last 15 years or so, he seems to be playing the actor Vince Vaughn who's pissed off to be employed. You know? Do you know what I mean? He just looks like he's fucking grumpy to be there.
Well, this one, he's trying to play. I mean, Full Metal Jacket is a classic example. It was the guy who plays the. He always plays a military officer and he's brilliant. He's Ali Ermey, his name is.
Right.
He's basically the army officer who was. I think in the military, in Full Metal Jacket, who is absolutely brilliant in that role.
Yeah.
You know, he makes that feel.
Oh, the drill sergeant?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. But, I mean, it's a famous story, isn't it, that they got him in as a consultant and none of the actors were, they were casting for that role.
Oh, really? And
he just did it, like, sort of 10 minutes of screaming insults without taking a breath, seemingly, into someone's face. And just like, just use him.
And there's a version where Vince Vaughn does that. And it's so shit.
Yeah.
It's just shit. It's just, sorry for this language, but just fuck off and get. Why do you not get someone good in? It's a really good part.
I've noticed from the IMDb page, Sam Worthington is in this film.
Yes. Oh, and that's another. He's the guy.
He's the guy from Avatar who.
Yeah, and he.
You know what? He's. I think he's Australian, isn't he, Sam Worthington?
And he's an. Oh, that as the point. So he was in it, and then Sam Worthington plays.
Oh, he's English.
Oh, he plays someone a bit higher up in the army. And then you just think, well, you're the wrong. This is totally miscast as well, because you're playing a role that maybe a 40 or 50 year old should be playing.
Yeah.
And you haven't got that.
He's odd.
Charisma.
Sam Worthington's odd, because I don't think he's without talent. I think he's. I think
he's good at the Avatar.
He's
role,
all right. But that's it. He was announced as being in Avatar. Which everyone knew was going to be absolutely huge, even before they'd seen it. And so everyone else cast him in everything, in the Wrath of the Titans films, and in everything they could, in little thrillers, Man on the Ledge, and stuff like that. And so he had a career before the first big thing came out.
Yeah.
He was the new Orlando Bloom in that way, and we're still reaping the fallout of that, that he's still, you know, considered box office, even though he's slightly boring.
Well, I just think that the casting was bad. I'm not a big fan of Andrew Garfield, actually.
Are you not?
No, I'm not a big fan of Vince Vaughn or of Sam Worthington.
Mm.
And they're all in key roles, and I think this could have been an interesting story if you would have had more... That whole bit of liking the characters
would have been far more powerful if they had a better cast. Anyway, the point is I give this 6 Mareks.
Okay.
It's just a sort of standard, basic war biopic. A cross between Forrest Gump and a Full Metal Jacket, both of which are far superior films.
Okay.
I think part of Forrest Gump is actually based on this character, because what he did was quite...
Oh, really?
What Donald Dross or Desmond Dross... Desmond T. Doss did was quite famous. If you go to Desmond T. Doss' Wikipedia page and read... This is just one of the things that he did. And he was sort of God-fit or God-loving man, which is why his motivation for doing something...
Yeah, yeah.
I mean... If you didn't like God, you'd have to be mentally ill. And he was exceptionally lucky. But what he did, I won't give it because it's a spoiler. It's probably a spoiler. Yeah. It is absolutely incredible. So it's worth looking on his Wikipedia page to see feats of outstanding
bravery.
Yeah. So I think it's good that he's celebrated, but I don't know. I think he's got nominated for the Oscars because it's an American war hero.
Best picture. Best actor for Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
Best director for Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
And best editing, I think.
Yeah. I have started to see a few of the Oscar nominees now.
Yeah.
I don't... More and more of the time, I think the list for the best foreign language film is better than the best... And I think it's not fair, because it's not the best films that are getting nominated, because the best films often... in the best foreign language category, not...
Yeah.
They should call it best American film.
People are saying that Paul Verhoeven's L should have been in, best picture or best foreign language and isn't in either.
Really?
Weirdly. But I really want to see it. It looks fascinating.
Yeah, it's been trailed a lot. So,
yeah.
I've seen Manchester by the Sea now.
Oh, what did you think?
I thought it was great. I mean, that one scene's absolutely
killer.
Yeah,
it is, isn't it? It is.
A really short scene. I think it's very good. Maybe, I think it probably does deserve it. And Hell or High Waters in there as well.
Yeah.
I'm very surprised that's Oscar nominated. I'm losing faith in the Oscar nominations list. But anyway, back to Hacksaw Ridge. It's just a film that's been done before, and every scene's been done better before.
Right.
And, I mean, the fighting scenes... I was watching them. I mean, they're quite horrific. It's a bit like the whole what's it called, the Tom Hanks one, when the famous one when he Saving Private Ryan, where the first time you saw them all coming landing on the beaches, it was just shockingly brutal seeing people blown to.
I mean, it they'd gone further than we'd seen before in terms of this is your introduction to their world. Plus, they were doing things with CGI that we hadn't seen before either. I mean, it is a piece of cinema history, that opener, isn't it?
And this is very similar to that, really. You're going to see some graphic war violence. And I was watching it, and I just thought, you know what? I'm 40. I've seen this, and I don't... There's no enjoyment. I don't find any... I think the shock value, when you see something the first time, you think that... Okay, that's what horror of the mass experience.
Yeah,
and Saving Private Ryan, that moment, you just think it was just total chaos from silence to just everyone being blown and just carnage.
And they invented, I think, or certainly they popularised that thing of a bomb going off nearby, or a shell landing rather, and getting the all you can hear is everything's muted and you hear the ringing of your ears. And now everyone does that when an explosion happens nearby. Because it's very affecting. You're in the head of the protagonist rather than, you know, just watching it with your popcorn. But everyone does that now, don't
they? But it's not enjoyable. It's not enjoyable to watch people being blown to shit. Really violent, really horrible deaths. And I just think, well, I've seen it and I'm not particularly... I can see that the technical ability in doing this is amazing, but it's not something that I really... Do you want to come to cinema? We're going to see lots of young people just get really brutal, like their faces blown up, guts cut, really just bodies just ripped apart at random. Yeah, great.
Brilliant.
How much is that? £15. It's not something that is enjoyable. And
I mean, if everyone in the cinema pulled their 15 quids, they could probably pay somebody to murder someone for real.
Give them a Chinese burn, at least.
At the very least.
I'll give you 100 quid to give that man a Chinese burn. But it, the problem was, I didn't even know which characters were getting... Because they're all exactly the same, these characters. Yeah. Like Tex, I'm making up names for these. His sort of group of people. I didn't give a shit, you know, who dies.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Vince Vaughn's there as well. And you think, I'll get him.
Get him. Maybe that's what it's about. It's just, you know...
Get Vince Vaughn.
The ghoulish fetishising of extreme violence and the... killing of actors you don't like.
I would go and watch that 101 Deaths of Vince Vaughn.
That would win the Oscar, though.
That's so what happens is...
Very bold piece.
A scientist clones Vince Vaughn...
Yeah.
100 times.
So he can kill him.
And then he goes and and he's only allowed to use a different technique.
It's like Brewster's Millions, but with murdering Vince Vaughn. Like, he's got to kill all 100 Vince Vaughns in different ways before midnight in order to inherit a book token for Waterstones.
A £5 book token for Waterstones and a 10% off at Wagamama's.
I mean, it would be worth it, wouldn't it?
10% off? All right, 15.
Is that for life or just once?
No, because the voucher runs out.
Okay.
And you have to have a stamp each... Stamp is Vince Vaughn's bloody fingerprint.
Sure.
And all the fingerprints are different, so they're going to be...
They know at Wagamama's. They're good at fingerprinting at Wagamama's.
That'd be good, 101. I mean, I expect a lot of Hollywood directors to listen to this for inspiration.
Probably. I mean, I've not seen any of them come out, but it takes a long time to make a film, doesn't it?
Yeah. Same. Well, I've banged on quite a lot. Six Marex.
Six Marex for Hacksaw Ridge. All right. I think it's time for this. Okay, this is a letter from Tom Crowley about Bone Tomahawk. Hi, David Marek and Buddy and the subplot dog next door. My girlfriend and I watched Bone Tomahawk the other night and utterly adored it, so thanks for your recommendation. Brilliant to see Kurt Russell moving into the old cowboy phase of his career. Long may it last. And good Christ, Richard Jenkins is good. That is not fair. It is not fair how good he is at acting. I thought it was especially amazing how well the film shifts from being a Band of Misfits Western into proper chilling horror. However, there was one moment, and anyone who's seen it will know the bit I mean, which was really, truly, disgustingly horrific. I couldn't decide whether it was too much or not. I've ultimately decided it was just right, as it scared the shit out of me, and I'll remember it until the day I die. But have you guys ever felt like a moment of violence took you out of a film rather than involved you in it more deeply? Keep watching the films, Tom Crowley. Yes, Bone Tomahawk, cannot recommend it highly enough. It is not for everyone, because the moment Tom's talking about...
I've seen it.
You've seen it. I mean, firstly, we'll get onto that moment in a bit. Richard Jenkins.
You don't even recognise... What's great about him is you don't even... And he's playing quite a different... It's quite nice to see someone play a character that's really refreshing and different and quite comic, but really...
Comic, but subtly comic. Like, he's basically, on paper, a lesser actor would just go, he's just an idiot. Our player is a simpleton. He's just an idiot. It's just like, no, he is a very layered character who just happens to not be very bright.
Oh, he's quite wise, though.
In his own ways. But he just, he's not cool either. And that's what's sort of wonderful. He's absolutely brilliant. And I thought, an actor I've not... knowingly seen in anything, who's one of the main guys from Lost.
Oh yes, Matt, he was great.
He was brilliant in it as well.
Yeah, and he playing, I think someone else emailed us about this, playing an evil, sort of not totally evil, but...
A troubled man.
An interesting character. Yeah. Because they are flawed characters.
But so Tom's absolutely right. The first half is...
Matthew Fox.
That's it, Matthew Fox. The first half is it's basically a character study, gang of misfits western, and then it goes into horror, but horror that's packed so much more punch because you care about these people so much, because you've spent so much time with. It's excellent.
Yeah, I think it was
and it stayed
good
with me.
that moment, though, that we're talking about, like, I think it really works, but it shocked me. It what? Seriously shocked me.
I was surprised. This is a bit spoiled. I thought one of the characters didn't react enough.
Okay,
to
yeah,
it.
I know what you're saying.
Because I think if you'd have seen that, then you would have been.
Yeah.
They seemed less traumatised than I was by it.
Yes.
And they're seeing it. But anyway, that's enough. I think we're much.
Yeah. Watch Bone Tomahawk, unless you don't like violence, in which case, under no circumstances, watch Bone Tomahawk. Or watch the first half. That would be all right for you.
I think I'm worried that I'm just going for emails. I'm worried that we might have read the email out before.
I don't believe we have.
Oh, yeah, oh, I've missed it.
Have you fucked up our filing system, Mary?
The filing system is very lax, so I apologise to people who we have missed the occasional email.
Well, we didn't actually answer Tom's question, which is, has there been any moment of violence that takes you out of a film?
Well, that's quite interesting, talking about Hacksaw Ridge.
Yes.
I felt, I've seen enough of this now.
Mm.
And I don't want to, it's not helping my enjoyment of the film, and it's just,
yeah.
I know what the point is, and it's now it just seems to the point where it's just getting, I know it's a horrific thing.
It's gratuitous.
But I don't need to see half an hour of it to tell me that.
But Mel Gibson seemed to have made that his thing, hasn't he?
Yeah.
After the success of Passion of the Christ. Mm. But anyway, who else has written in?
Ben Golding has written in. Do you want to do a read?
Sure. Afternoon, chaps. Just to say that I really enjoy the podcast. I can't say that I was there at the start, or indeed that I went back and listened to all the ones from the Absolute Radio days, but I have been listening regularly for a good while now. Ones I particularly enjoyed, I think it was the one around episode 100, when you watched some silent films for the first time and were spellbound. Your sense of wonder really came across in the discussions. Also, the Ben Stiller, Walter Mitty one, where Marek was just furious. I remember that. Very old discussion that I meant to join in with. Awkward films to watch on a plane. The most awkward one I've seen on a plane was The Look of Love, Steve Coogan starring in the biopic of a Soho porn baron. The Soho porn baron, really. I saw Coogan and in my head assumed it would be Alan Partridge. Miles Jupp turned up briefly at the start too. It was actually quite a depressing tale, punctuated with loads of bare breasts. As I said, awkward on a plane. Hunt for the Wilder People was ace, you were right. Another couple of films I've managed to see, Parenthood doesn't lend itself to cinema trips, Tickled, a New Zealand documentary. A TV journalist does a small feature about the world of competitive endurance tickling, and it gets weirder from there. Sounds good. Le Combattant, French, so Marek might like it. A sort of rom-com, though centred around an army recruitment drive. I remember laughing a good few times. Also, did you ever see Inner World? That was a genuinely good offbeat rom-com. I'm not sure what my film selections say about me. Nothing bad, I'm sure. Oh, and finally, someone recommended Kings of Summer recently. I second that. It's far funnier than a coming-of-age film has any right to be. Keep watching the films, Ben. P.S. I have no accent. Thank you, Ben. We will add those films to our ongoing list that we have now compiled, you'll be pleased to hear, and we will be going through your recommendations and telling everyone which one of you are fucking idiots and which ones have real taste.
Hey, Davey!
No, it'll be good. I'm looking forward to it. But we'll get on to that next week or in a couple of weeks. Next week, I think we'll start on that.
Another quick one?
Yeah, sure.
This is from Darren Rogers. Subject, Dano and Cusack. Hi guys, just wanted to say thank you for recommending Love and Mercy, the biopic of Brian Wilson. As someone that is not a fan of the Beach Boys, this film would have probably passed me by. I have to recommend this film to anyone that likes films as much as I do. It was outstanding. I know you sing the praises of Paul Dano, but I found John Cusack to be on the same level. What Dano films have you seen that make you love his work so much? What am I missing? Keep watching Marek's YouTube channel. That's right, Darren. As John Cusack ages, he seems to be morphing facially into Nick Cage.
It's true.
Or is it me that just sees this?
No, it's absolutely true. And they were in a film together fairly recently that I watched, in fact. He's also starting to act like Nick Cage. If you saw him playing Edgar Allan Poe as a detective,
in a terrible film. The Raven, I think it's called.
Oh, yeah, I think he's, I saw bits of
he's
that.
He's trying to be sort of Nick Cagey out there, sort of, is he on drugs? Is he just strange? And it didn't quite work.
I remember watching John Cusack in Better Off Dead when I was a teenager thinking, I want to be John Cusack.
He's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, he had a little purple patch, didn't he?
What, in his hair?
Yeah, right. He's removed. He's removed.
Oh, good.
What Paul Dano film was doing... make you think he's so great. Swiss Army Man, Youth, Prisoners,
Little Miss Sunshine, There Will Be Blood being the obvious ones.
He doesn't I like the fact he chooses to play difficult characters.
Yeah,
he plays a lot of weirdos, but I think he makes some good choices. He's, we talked about a couple of weeks ago about actors who are signs of a good film.
Mm.
He's normally a sign of an interesting,
I mean, he's got interesting film. taste. So yeah, there are people who you go, you're really talented, but you have no taste. You keep doing shit things.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas he at least you go, oh, he's decided to do it. Well, that's interesting. I'll have a look. Buddy's just made himself a nest amongst Marek's jacket. So that's nice. Any more this week, or is that enough?
There's some... I'm realising that I've read some... some of these before.
This is the
one about West Side Story before, didn't
we? That's right. This is the poster for The Frozen Ground, which Nicolas Cage and John Cusack were in together, that I mentioned before. And
They are starting to look like each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's just do one more, I think, because we've got a few here. This is from Ben Grubb.
Ben Grubb says, "Dear David Marek and Buddy, Happy New Year and what a start it's been."
It's already, I mean, we're in February now, so we're about two, three weeks behind.
"I've just listened to your review of A Monster Calls and was very glad to hear that you enjoyed it as much as I did and had exactly the same tear-jerking experience as me, although anyone that doesn't must be dead inside. I don't have a huge amount to add to your review, which was pretty well spot on, I thought, but felt compelled to write to you anyway. I, like David, didn't know much about the film before going to see it, other than seeing the trailer before Rogue One. From the trailer, it did feel very much like an, albeit quite dark, kids' film, where the child protagonist befriends a mythical creature, and they end up helping each other. I even joked to my wife that I was going to take our 3-year-old son to see it. I'm very glad I didn't. The scene where, potential spoiler, the grandmother is watching the tapes of Connor painting with his mum, and age 5 was what... did it for me. Even thinking bad about it now is making me choke up. Potential spoiler over. That without context, that'll mean nothing to you. I thought visually the cinematography and the animation were both stunning. I loved how dramatic yet muted the British countryside where Connor lived looked, and it juxtaposed so well against the vibrant, colourful and textured look of the animation sequences. The performances were all superb. I was braced for a slightly ropey English accent from Sigourney Weaver, but it never came, and Liam Neeson was a good fit for the voice of the tree monster. Lewis McGonagall really carried the film incredibly well, with very convincing and powerful performance, especially from someone so young. I couldn't really decide by the end if the tree monster was actually friends with Connor or not. He certainly uses the tough love approach, which is probably what Connor needed. In some ways, that actually fits in perfectly with the tales which the tree monster tells about how things aren't always what they seem. After the heights of Deadpool, my love of Marvel films has really waned now, and I'm crying out for more original and emotional films like A Monster Calls in the future. 2017 has its work cut out. Sorry for the ramble. Keep watching the films." I mean, I parrot what Ben said. A Monster Calls is the best thing I've seen in recent times, and you really should see it.
Well, recommendations.
There we go. As we've already mentioned this week, and we've mentioned in previous weeks, we have started compiling a list of recommended films that our listeners have suggested that we will, one by one, get through, watch them, and then share the good ones with you. So, that really is my favourite bit of this show. So if you have anything that we've not mentioned, you don't think we've seen, and you absolutely love, then let us know. You can go to our website, filmfandango.com, and write to us from there. Film recommendations or anything else you would like us to discuss on the programme.
And also, if you think, oh, I've really enjoyed this podcast, I really want to help them make more. Why not donate £1 million on the button there?
The donate button is also on filmfandango.com.
£1 million, or alternatively, £1.
£1,
but
yeah.
You will feel a lot better about yourself.
Yes.
If you donate £1 million.
That's right. Well, I have seen a film, Marek. I mentioned last week that I was, straight after the podcast, or 8 hours later, was going to the Pitch House Central for 2 a.m. in the morning to watch Woody Harrelson, in his directorial debut, attempt a single-take, live-streamed to cinemas feature-length film. So, it was called Lost in London, and it's vaguely autobiographical. If my memory serves, I think the titles that come up first in the film are Too Much of This Is True. So it's sort of an embarrassing story of how he was over here, I think in 2005, and ended up getting into sort of a farcical late night trouble with the police and all sorts of stuff. That he plays himself, and there's an actress who is excellent playing his wife. I will look her name up now.
So it was just screened in one cinema or loads of cinemas?
Loads. The reason I think he's chosen to do it at 2 a.m. in the morning, it finished around 4 a.m. in the morning. A.m. in the morning, what am I saying that for? I think the reason is that was a reasonable time to screen it in both East and West Coast in America.
Oh,
so we
I see.
Got the bum deal of having to see it at the actual time it was being filmed. So the Pitch House Central in London was the only British cinema it was shown in, but it was shown all over the world.
And was it packed?
Yeah, absolutely packed. And so basically, he is here for some promotional thing. He's there with his young family and his wife, and his wife is played by Eleanor Matsura. She's excellent. And the tabloids break that he was in a three-in-a-bed sex romp with some prostitutes, I think, or young girls, whatever. And he gets into a fight with his wife, and she runs off back to the hotel whilst he's being dragged off to a club with some Saudi princes. And he only later realises she's got his wallet and keys and everything.
Classic.
And that's the beginning of it. He bumps into his best friend Owen Wilson in the club as well, and they have a conversation where Owen Wilson reveals, yeah, he's Woody Harrelson's best friend, but Owen Wilson's best friend is Wes Anderson, and they end up having a fist fight over it.
So, was the acting good? Was it work?
It was genuinely tense at the beginning because they were doing a sort of hype, almost documentary feature before it started to get you into it and to show so behind the scenes of them rehearsing and talking to camera about what it was like, and the sound wasn't on for that bit. So everyone in the auditorium was like, shit, is this going to be fuck up? Anyway, the sound came on shortly after, and it was really good. Like, it was funny. And I tell you, Woody Harrelson was brilliant. Like, yeah. Not a single beat drop. The only slight thing, glitches, were some people hitting their microphones accidentally once or twice.
Yeah.
But that just added to the fact it was proved it was live. And a couple of moments where you go, that could have been better lit, but they were outside, so what the fuck were they going to do? And it flows beautifully from building to taxi to building to, you know, he gets arrested, thrown into the cells. They managed a dream sequence where the country and western singer Willie Nelson appears to Woody to sort of give him sage advice. And then when the camera turns around again, he's gone. And all of this stuff, I tell you, who really came up in my estimations as well is Owen Wilson.
Oh, really?
Like, for a single take thing, you would just go, that would be in a finished film. Whereas everything else felt slightly like it's rough around the edges, which is a good thing. But his performance was fucking funny and really slick. Script's excellent as well. Like,
wow.
Really good. It was really, really fun.
And everyone, was it that a universal opinion?
Yeah, yeah. People left happy, even though they had to stay up till 2 a.m. And you know, London, it isn't a 24-hour city. Yeah. Like, from the point the pubs close around 11, 12 if you're lucky, you know, till 1 a.m, people had nothing to do. I walked home, I think, but
Davey.
4 a.m. No, night bus. I got the night bus. But I tell you a funny thing, though. The following day, when I was feeling a bit jet-lagged, I went for a walk in Regent's Park with Buddy. And whilst pausing to have a coffee and the cafe there that on the top of a hill, who should pop his head into the cafe on his bicycle but Owen Wilson.
Wow!
Yeah, he was there just for the day, just, you know, cycling around.
Wow!
Yeah, it was quite cool. But no, genuinely, it was like, what a brave thing to do as your directorial debut, you know, like, if it had gone wrong, that's it, there's nothing you can do, you know,
yeah.
Nothing. It had young kids in it playing his kids, and they were fantastic. Like,
but great for publicity, though. It's a great way of getting your people to actually watch your film as an event.
What's so strange is that you and I think you brought it up, after, it may have been our discussion of Victoria, which is a film last year, it was one of my favourites of the year, we discussed how long it will be until someone attempts to do this live.
Yeah, not realising then that...
It was not long is the answer, you know. And you can get it on iTunes now to watch the film. Now, I don't know how satisfying it will be just to sit down and watch it, because, of course, compared to a proper feature, it's slightly shonky round the edges. There's a full soundtrack and stuff, like they brought in music and things. There was one slightly dodgy moment where... Willie Nelson's song segues from being pre-recorded to him playing live as they reveal he's there in the room, and it wasn't quite there. But it that just adds to its charm. It goes, they did it. They actually did this. It
must be nice making a film and thinking, oh no, we've got to work on the edit and sound for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
Just finish it. That's done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's part of the promise that we're now done. That's it. So who knows? Maybe for the... release on iTunes and stuff, they cleaned up a bit of it, like took out the mic pops and things. I don't know, I've not seen that.
Yeah.
But no, it was a genuinely fun thing to have bothered going to and to have been part of.
Because... Was there much travelling? Because in Victoria, one of the part of the charm of it, rather than, because a lot of films are based on plays.
Yes.
And you know, when you go and see a film, it's been a play and it feels really...
They just change location for no real reason and carry on the conversation
or
they were
having.
Or
there's not enough outside location.
Well, not to spoiler it, but the events are out there because they happened. Woody Harrelson ended up getting into trouble for vandalising a taxi because he accidentally pulled the ashtray out of the door thinking it was the door release. And he got arrested for it. Even though you're not allowed to smoke in taxis, so it's a useless piece of shit.
Yeah.
But the taxi driver was a prick. And so, and he had to get to, because of this whole problem with his wife, and he didn't have time to apologise to her and to explain and to everything else, he was supposed to meet her at 7:30 the following morning on the set of Harry Potter to be there for his kids and, you know, do all of this. And so that's what's at stake. I won't spoiler it for you, but there is a talking head as the very last thing from Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh, really?
telling you the truth of what happened.
Wow.
So no, it's fun, you know, it's fun. And Woody Harrelson, you forget he started in comedy because he can do it, but he can also do all of the serious stuff as well. Like, this felt like Zombieland in that he's got a foot on either side of that.
Yeah.
And he's bloody good at both of them.
But he's still great in Cheers, though, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
So watch that on iTunes.
I guess, yeah, Lost in London. But I was genuinely going, it might be a car crash, but at least I'll get to see it and talk about it on the show.
Yeah, what a good experience.
Yeah. Yeah, but everyone's good in it, you know. And he's clearly just got his best mates to agree to stay up till 4 a.m. to be in his film with him.
He sounds like he's got better mates than Mel Gibson.
Probably. Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is entirely guesswork, but Woody Harrelson, Owen Wilson, and Willie Nelson strike me as maybe pot smokers, do you think? Do you think that might be what they do together?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
You think that might be the case?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate that when they do. Anyone who smokes weed.
in a film starts laughing uncontrollably, as if that is the experience of that is.
What do you find it to be? Just sullen silence.
No, but everyone smoked weed. It's never like that. It's like the whole acid thing. You suddenly, oh, there we go. There's a pink unicorn. Instantly flying around. It's really strange the way the drugs are depicted wholly inaccurately.
Yes, it's true. But
that's a different conversation.
It is a different conversation. Maybe for next week, when I will be discussing the film T2 Trainspotting.
Ooh.
Well, that's enough for this week. We'll be back. As I say, we'll discuss the Trainspotting sequel directed by Danny Boyle, and Marek will have seen one of your recommendations.
Keep
watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.